The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Nice to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In.
You have always been a voice of reason through all of this.
Appreciate your time, what you're doing for America.
I give you advice, and it doesn't work at all.
You are definitely not inept by any means.
I like to hear women say that about me.
Whatever advice you're going to send my way, I am 100% taking it.
I can't tell you what to do. I will not tell you what to do.
Okay. Well, thanks.
That wasn't the answer I wanted.
Are you kidding me?
Great stuff, Dr. Ray. I'm glad I called.
I've scheduled my day around listening to your radio show.
You don't have to laugh so hard.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Rated PG-13. Psychological grandstanding. Taking you into the psychosphere. That's one notch below the ionosphere. Nice to have you with me. By the way, I noticed where I work out, if you are under 35, you have about a 90% chance of having, and I don't want to say a tattoo, multiple tattoos, and I guess sleeves. And I thought about this. You know, you're working out, trying to be strong, buff. And so what do? You put a chain around your bicep or some type of very strong-looking, unbreakable indication of durability. And I thought about that. I thought, you know, when you're 35, that chain will become a picket fence when you're 80. It'll be as though everybody will just be wearing Rorschach ink blots when they're 80 years old. What is that? That blob, that big blob there that you have right on your neck. What's that blob? Well, it used to be the sun rising over the mountains. Well, it looks like an ink blot. Looks like an elephant holding a potted plant. Nice to have you with me here, Dr. Ray Grandy, program Doctors In. Call number 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call. I'd love to hear from you. Got a question, circumstance, something in your life that, you want to bounce an idea off of. I'm not going to do therapy here, obviously. That's for the office, and I'm not going to diagnose. And I certainly am not going to say, well, you know, your therapist said this, but no, I can't do that. I can't walk onto another therapist's turf. But what we can do is educate a little bit, maybe give you a thought, something to accept or reject, something to neglect or suspect. 877-57 Equal is the number to call. Get on to the program. I want to thank the folks in Nashua, New Hampshire, the Legatus Group there. Very nice. A chapter just now being officially enchapterated. And then, good Lord permitting, tomorrow, Naples, Florida. That's really nice down there. Legatus Chapter in Naples. Numbers are coming in from the St. Louis audiences. Covenant Radio. You guys have exceeded my wildest expectations regarding audience size. Some of those audiences are going to be absolutely monstrous for the TV show. Still have time to get into the audience because we're in a large facility, so we can put a couple hundred people in there, which is what we're approaching on one of them. So 877-573-7825. Register Radio with Jeanette DiMello and Matthew Bunsen. Saturday afternoons, 4 o'clock Eastern Time. Sunday morning, 11 o'clock Eastern Time on EWTN Radio. Jeanette and Matthew shine the truth of the gospel on the events of the day. That's neat stuff when you have current events intertwined with our faith perspective. 877 57 equal is the number to call to get onto the program. One of the more common reasons parents enter my office is frustration. I'm very frustrated with this child-rearing thing. Go to confession. Bless me, Father. Before children, I was pretty nice. Now, I'm not pretty or nice. And you don't like the way you talk to your kids, and you don't like the way you lose your temper, and you don't like the way you get frustrated, you don't like the way you say things. And I think any priest will tell you, when you go into the confessional, especially if you got a whole passel of kids, little ones, big ones, a lot of your frustration, a lot of your conduct that you're ashamed of is, I don't want to say it's brought on by the kids, but the kids are maybe the target of it. So what is it? Why do we get so frustrated with kids? Now, let me give you some of the more common explanations, and I talk about this in several of my discipline books, because the frustration part keeps you from acting consistently or reasonably. First, frustration is an umbrella frustration. We have not accepted what kids are. We may give a nod, a little intellectual nod, to the fact that they're by nature immature or self-centered or impulsive or sneaky to get their way. It's kind of the state of immaturity. But we forget that. We somehow have gotten an idea. And I think that we've gotten this idea and been misguided far more than less educated previous generations. They knew what kids were in their conduct, in their personalities. They knew this. It's almost kind of like, what do you expect? They're going to try to do what they can get away with. They may be sneaky. It could be deceptive. Of course, they're kids. They don't have a tightly formed, mature self-control. That comes with years, and I dare say that most of us, me included, are still working on our self-control. So the first thing is to recognize what you're raising. You're not raising something easy like a rabid timberwolf or a Bengal tiger. You're raising a child. And maybe the first law of reducing frustration with a child is expect childish behavior. Expect that they're going to do things that you think, why do they keep doing that? Well, because they're kids. But he's never done this before. He's never looked at me straight into the face and lied before. Has he ever been 8 before? As they get older, they do more kid-type stuff with a little more sophistication. And you get yourself frustrated when you say to yourself, why are they that way? Well, one reason, there's a lot, but one is because that's who they are. Another source of frustration. How long is this going to take? I mean, he's been getting disciplined for the same stuff. Yeah. Haven't you been getting disciplined for the same stuff? And can I make an assumption here? I don't know. I don't know you and I don't know your child, but I'm going to guess that you are older than your child. Just a speculation. I could be way off there, but you're older than your child. Do you keep doing the same stuff? Don't you get disciplined? Your conscience bothers you? Somebody gives you a bad reaction? You feel guilty. You wish you wouldn't have done it. You don't like when you do it. Like St. Paul says, I do the things I don't want to do. So, in fact, it takes a long time to learn. Repetition is normal in discipline, but it frustrates parents. Why aren't they getting this sooner? A parent will come into my office and say, I've tried everything with this child. Nothing works. How old is he? 4. Well, there's no way you're going to try everything with a four-year-old. He's too young. All kinds of things you have yet to try with a four-year-old. And furthermore, recognize that we're just not consistent. We're not. Our nature is to be inconsistent. So therefore, when we say, how long is this going to take? He just doesn't seem to be getting it. It's in part, in many cases, because we're not very consistent. I'm going to do a monologue about that. But I'm going to assert that the average parent is somewhere between, are you ready for this? This is the number that I have fallen upon in all these years of working with parents. I'd say somewhere between 10 and 15% consistency. Somewhere between that. And that's typically enough. Really, believe it or not, it is. But when you're at that level of consistency, it takes a lot longer for discipline to teach. Another frustration. This makes me look like a bad parent. This makes me feel like a failure. I thought I would be a loving person, a nice person, and I would sing songs with them every night before they went to bed. And now I look at the clock. I can't wait till they go to bed. You don't take your kids' behavior personally. It may be that your kids' behavior is in fact related to your behavior, of course. But at the same time, when they pull a stunt or they do something that you think to yourself, they should know better. We've taught them better. And they do this. It's no reflection on you. Well, Doctor, it is a reflection on me because I'm not a very good disciplinarian. In that sense, yes. But in the sense that they're doing this just to make you look bad, no. No, they're doing it because they want to do it. They're doing it because they thought they could get away with it. They're doing it because the impulse hit them. They're doing it because they don't see anything wrong with it, despite what you've been trying to tell them. If you look at your kids' conduct, this is especially the older kids, the 13, 14, 15-year-olds, if you look at their conduct and some of the stunts they pull out of their immaturity, and you think to yourself, I'm a failure. They wouldn't have done that had I been a better parent. Well, that's a quick way to drive yourself crazy and get very, very frustrated. Ooh, I'm way past. Okay, one more. There's so many reasons why parents get frustrated. Let me give you one more. You wait too long to act. He's been tormenting his sister for the last 12 minutes. You've nagged him. You've yelled at him. You've told him to stop. You've threatened. You've warned. And finally, you erupt. Well, yeah, but if you'd have done something back at minute number one before your frustration reached nuclear level, you probably would have been able to act more calmly. But when you've kind of re-reminded and nagged and negotiated and reasoned and said, stop, stop, and it hasn't done anything, which much of the time words don't, then you get frustrated. Then you erupt. Then you say, why do I have to get so frustrated before they listen to me? Well, because they'll listen to you if you back it up, back at minute number one. That's just a little sampler of the more common frustrations that parents have. So, 877-573-7825, 877-57-EQUAL. That is the number to call to get onto the program. If you have a situation, question, circumstance, I would love to hear from you. We have plenty of lines open, and there's a real good chance you're going to get through. I'm Dr. Ray.
Hi, this is Mike Aquilina with a few words about St. Basil the Great. St. Basil is known as a pastor and thinker. He wrote theological masterpieces still read today. But he was also a builder who found new institutional forms for Christian charity. He built a complex that included a hospital, a hostel, a soup kitchen, a trade school. It was so vast it was called the New City, like the New Jerusalem coming down from heaven.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
This program brought to you in part by the town of Ave Maria, Florida.
Ave Maria, a big kind of small town. A golf cart friendly, ride your bike everywhere kind of town with something for everyone. Resort style amenities, two golf courses, shopping, and dining in our town center. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at the core of the community and a wide range of homes to meet your family's needs. Visitors are welcome. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. Ave Maria, a big kind of small town.
I think I'm going to have to change this channel. I'm sorry.
Don't touch that dial. And if your TV has a dial, you better get out and get another one. What are our kids going to tell their kids, huh? 589 channels. It's all we had when I was a boy. We were grateful children. We were happy children. The way it was when I was a boy. Seven remotes. Power buttons up at the top. Had to stretch your thumb to get that top power button. Sometimes you hurt stuff right in your joint there, you know. Bob from Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Bob, how are you?
Hey, very good, Dr. A. Love your show. You make me laugh out loud more than I have in a long time, so keep it up.
Thank you, sir.
I have a question. I'm thinking about what I heard today. You talked about parents and kids. And a couple of weeks ago, you talked about the tragic shooting, the young boy, and the parents have been held liable. Since that happened, since you mentioned that and the testimony come in, do you kind of think that you still believe the same way about how the responsibility went?
Here's where I'm so very, very unsettled by that ruling, Bob. Because they decided that these parents should have known and should not have done some of the things that they did as parents. And they linked that directly to what this kid did. And granted, it was heinous what he did. It was terrible, awful. What scares me about that is because I've been a shrink for a long time, I see a lot of parents who tell me of the horrible things their kids have done. But Dr. Reed, not as horrible as killing somebody. No, I've had kids who've killed somebody. So are we to look at the parents and say, somehow, some way, you should have seen this? You should have known this was going to happen. And furthermore, we decide your parenting is so deficient that you should go to jail for 10 to 15 years. Bob, that scares the dickens out of me.
Okay.
Now, it may be, I do not know anything about the particulars of that case. But from what I've read, both the mom and the dad may not have presented themselves so very well at all. And they presented themselves as maybe unlikable to the jury, so that the people saw this, and because of what the kid did. Well, let me interrupt myself. I was in Uvalde, Texas last year. Does that name ring a bell?
Oh yeah, absolutely does.
It was, and we had a border guard who took me around, and he showed me the school with the 20 children who were killed. Now, this kid who did this, in fact, was a horrid, indescribable. Or that situation in Connecticut. I forget the name of the little town in Connecticut where this kid opened up on the kindergartners. Sandy Hook, yeah. Now, those are horrible, horrible things. Do we look at the parents or the supervisory adults and say, why didn't you see this? What did you do that allowed this? How many vile video games did you let him watch, and for how long? Where was your supervision? Why didn't you supervise? How did you get a hold of a gun? That gun was supposed to be kept safe, and you didn't keep it safe. So that's what scares me, Bob. That truly scares me when we step back and we say, well, we got to hold somebody accountable. We got to hold the parents accountable. Because let's say one of your 15-year-olds or 16-year-olds does something horrible. Okay. He goes to a party. He gets drunk. He has a car accident. He kills somebody. Where were you, Bob? Where were you? Why didn't you stop him? You know, you knew he was hanging around with that kid. You knew that kid was bad news. And you knew there was going to be alcohol at that party, too. And you let him go. And what are you doing giving him your car, especially 4 times earlier you found out he was drinking and he drove drunk? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where do you start to draw that line? And if somebody says, well, some way, somehow, we got to hold those parents accountable. If you take that perspective, then you are automatically forced to say, where? How? Who decides? That's scary. That's scary. So I have not changed my high level of nervousness on this, and I suspect there will be more of these such things. What do you think now? You dispute it?
Well, can you hear me? I'm sorry.
Yes, you're coming through clear.
I respect your opinion, but I think at the same time, the parents, knowing that the child's background, didn't do a very good job of securing the gun. I mean, you have ways you can get a safe in the house, and I think if simply they would have done that, despite all the things he did in the past, and then he wouldn't have had a chance to get his hand on a gun. So I guess that's my problem, and I very much respect your opinion there, Dr. Ray.
Well, do you think, Bob, that they even remotely anticipated, given the kid's background,
yeah,
remotely anticipated now that in fact he'd take a gun and go shoot up a school?
That I don't know. I don't know how to answer that, because I don't know if they knew he was capable of that. I really don't know.
Yeah, I know. See, I'm
so sorry, because I guess this morning I was seeing some of the parents they were interviewed in the trial, and it broke my heart. It just totally broke my heart, the parents of the people who were.
And I understand that. I understand that. And that's another place where I'm nervous, because obviously that's incredible, indescribable pain. Trust me, I've dealt with a lot of parents who've lost children. But when you make that the case, which is, this devastated my life, so therefore these people should be held accountable for these reasons. Again, the question becomes, could they reasonably anticipate he was going to do something like this? And I suspect not. What parent thinks, okay, my kid's going to commit this egregious act, and that's okay with me, and I'll just give him the opportunity? Boy, there's so much to say. But, Bob, I do appreciate it. Thank you, sir. This is Dr. A, 877-573-7825. Oh, boy, there's some good comments up there on this.
What does the Catholic Catechism mean when it says Jesus teaches us to pray with filial boldness? Filial boldness means praying like the son or daughter that we are. Whatever you ask in prayer, believe that you will receive it, and you will, Jesus says. The key is the faith that does not doubt. Jesus was disheartened by his neighbors and his own disciples' lack of faith. He greatly admired the great faith exhibited by the Roman centurion and the Canaanite woman. Of what does the prayer of faith consist? It contains the disposition of the heart to do the will of the Father, a concern for cooperating with the divine plan. In Jesus, the kingdom of God is at hand. In addition to conversion and faith, Jesus calls us to watchfulness, attentive to him who is and him who comes, in memory of his first coming in the flesh and in hopefulness of his second coming in glory. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Are you passionate about Jesus? Are you zealous for Jesus? Are you fervent for Jesus? Are we fervent for the gospel? Are we passionate about helping this world come to know him? Is that true? It's not true for most people in the church. Is Jesus my best friend? Is he your best friend? I'm looking around the church. There's a set of guys in here who have great man caves. As I was praying this morning, I felt like the Lord said, hey, when are you going to come to my man cave? Like, you guys think a flat screen TV is really cool. Well, you should see what I got to offer. Because I and I alone, he says, can really give you what it is you're longing for. Whoever it is we're rooting for right now, they're going to lose eventually. Or whatever it is that's occupying our time, one day we're going to realize it really wasn't that important. Why aren't we hanging out with the one who alone can show us what life is really all about? When was the last time you hung out in the Lord's man cave?
I am intimately familiar with a case where the guardian of a mentally disturbed young adult who got pregnant and gave birth, the guardian told the court, this child is at extremely high risk. This child needs to be placed for adoption. This parent is not capable of raising this child competently, and the child will be at serious risk. The court said, too bad, so sad. It's her child. She ended up murdering that child. Who's accountable? Court said it's her kid. Her guardian was saying, no, I'm the guardian here. This is dangerous. This is extremely dangerous. Don't. The court said no. Should they have seen it coming? The young adult had a long, long history of mental disorder. Long history. Incredibly maladjusted life functioning. Who's held accountable there? Annette from Ohio had a comment and she left. Her question was, does anyone hold parents accountable for children committing suicide? No, but you could almost make the case. Didn't you see it coming? Weren't there signs? Did you ignore the signs? This child has had two gestures prior. I'm expecting that's not going to happen simply because there isn't violence against another person or persons. But yet, one could use somewhat the same rationale. Did you not see this coming? You had a gun in your home. You had pills in your home that were not locked up. Did you not see this? Ray from Kentucky. Hi, Ray.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How you doing?
Doing okay, sir.
This situation really concerns me from a lot of perspectives. And let me start from the beginning, lest anyone should think I'm insensitive to how the parents of the children that were killed. I lost an adult child, so I understand the parents' grief a lot. But anyway, my concern over this whole thing is the government is trying to say, well, your parents have no right to determine whether the child can have an abortion or not. They don't have to be consulted. They're trying to say that if a child wants to be transitioned into a different gender, the parents can't interfere. What rights do the parents have, and what responsibilities they have? We're holding them responsible, and then saying they don't have the right to control a child. At the same time, we're creating a nightmare that makes zero sense.
Ray, it sounds like what you're saying is there's moral inconsistency, there's logical inconsistency. On one hand, we say the parents should have been aware of what this child could do to hurt other people. But on the other hand, we say, well, if the child wants to do something that has the potential to seriously hurt themselves or to kill an unborn baby, you can't do anything about it. I think, Ray, that they're both the same coin. And here's what I mean. It is the state who decided that those parents should be held liable. It is the state who said, we have enough evidence to conclude that you should have seen this coming, you should have stopped it. It is also the state who says, you are not permitted to know whether your child wants to transition if she tells someone in a school district. We're not obliged to tell you. If she wants an abortion at age 14, many places, many states, she doesn't have to get parental permission, even though there are risks with abortion. And who knows how she'll react to it 10 years from now when she comes to conclude, I just had a baby and I realized that I killed a baby in my womb 10 years ago. So you're right. It is the state who's deciding, and that's what's scary. The state is saying in these parental decisions, we will decide what rights you have as a parent. That's frightening. It's frightening. I've seen parents get in trouble for spanking their kid. I saw a lady get in trouble because her two-year-old was at a swimming pool and was crying. And somebody turned her into Children's Services because they said that this two-year-old had dark clothes on, and the mother should have been aware that dark clothes absorb sunlight, and that's probably why the kid was so distressed. Yeah. Well, I could fill you with a whole bunch of stories like that.
I had a mother. One question.
Go ahead, Ray. Go ahead.
He holds the state accountable.
That's like with the court. The court in that case where that young mother killed her baby, he was 1.5 years old, killed him. The court was the one who said, we're not even going to do an assessment here. We're not even going to look into this. We're not even going to try to anticipate. Sure. There were signs all over the place. You're right. Ray, thank you. Thank you for the comment. It's not as inconsistent as you think, because once the state starts to decide what parents are allowed and not allowed to do on the basis of quote-unquote psychologically proper parenting, I don't know where that's going to end up. 877-573-7825. Andrew Pruchek, I got time to do this. In both trials, the prosecutors argued that the parents, more than anyone else, could have prevented the massacre had they taken the smallest of steps. Putting the cable lock in a gun, storing it in a locked safe, telling the school about the weapon when they were summoned. They vowed to get their son help within 48 hours and return to their jobs. The school counselor and the dean of students concluded the boy posed no threat to himself and allowed him to return to class. 2 hours later, he fired his first shot. Exactly. Anybody who is familiar with psychologists' ability to predict violence knows how pathetic we are at it. It is similar. I did a long study of it. Did a meta-analysis, and predicting violence is similar in accuracy to flipping a coin.
And now, the EWTN Family Prayer with Father Joseph.
Family, a prayer that we pray together is a powerful prayer. So please pray together with me, our EWTN family prayer. Today we pray for the caregivers of the sick. O Most Holy Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, we adore you. You have first loved us, and through your Son you have taught us the excellence of self-giving love. Give to those who are caregivers of a sick parent or child, brother or sister, the assistance of your holy angels. Lessen their burdens and give them great joy in practicing a work of mercy. And since charity is never forgotten by you, reveal to them their heavenly reward. Amen.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
It was like these aha moments kept happening for me over and over and over again. And they still happen because every time you turn around, you see something in society, if you have eyes to see and ears to hear and are looking at it through the lenses of Scripture and teachings of the faith, as we say always here, it makes sense. You connect the dots and you look at what's happening with all of this idea of the transgender ideology and this saying, I want to do whatever I want with my body because it's my body. And then you see all the problems that come from that, not even looking at it from a quote-unquote religious perspective, but the physical problems and mental problems, of course, that the media tried to suppress, but now it's starting to come out. It's like, well, that's because you're denying who you are, made in the image and likeness of God. It's not that complicated, but we make it complicated because we don't want to look at the truth.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Well, this has touched a nerve. A lot of people are coming out and wanting to weigh in on all the ramifications of this. Yeah, the grief of those parents is indescribable. Indescribable. And I don't know what part they exactly played in the court. Probably not. I would think the law would not allow them to speak until after the verdict. But the question becomes, can you predict? And the counselors said the boy's not a threat. Okay, so those are the quote-unquote professionals saying that, and the parents got held accountable for not recognizing that he was a threat. Shifting gears a little bit, we're going to go to Teresa from South Carolina. Hello, Teresa.
Oh, hi, Dr. Ray. So good talking to you.
Well, so good listening to you. So good listening to you.
Well, that's a good thing. Thank you. Well, I have a lot to say. I have a daughter. She has a 2-year-old, and she's just really concerned that he's not talking a lot, saying a lot of words yet. And I'm just trying to tell her, you know, he says daddy very well, da-da, daddy. But he doesn't say mama. And he waves and he throws kisses. And he just started daycare in January. And he was in the toddler class, then he turned 2 in March. So now he had to step up to the 2-year-old class. And he's adjusting very well, you know. But she's just really concerned that he's not talking.
But those little 2-year-old girls are going to talk circles around him.
Well, I know.
Well, you answered one of my questions. I was going to say, is this a boy or a girl? As a general rule, boys,
it's a boy.
Yeah, boys are not as verbal as girls, as soon as girls. Mm-hmm. They talk less early and they talk less sophisticatedly. So that's one factor. A couple things your daughter might look into. If there is a language delay of some type, is that part and parcel of a broader cognitive delay? And by that I mean he doesn't understand like you might expect him to understand at age 2 years. If you say to him, what's his name, Johnny, I need you to go over there
Jonathan.
And pick... John, see, that's good. I got a Jonathan, too.
Jonathan, you got it close. Yeah.
There you go. I need you to go over there and pick up that ball for me and bring it to Grandma. Now, can he do that?
Mm-hmm.
Or does he look at you like, what are you saying?
He's starting to do it. I mean, he doesn't always, you know, like she'll say, he'll like throw his glass on the floor, his cup on the floor, and she'll say, pick it up, you know. And
well, that's different. That's different from defiance, natural 2-year-old defiance. I'm talking about lack of understanding. He looks at you like, I don't know what you just said. I don't know what you asked me to do.
Okay.
So you got you got two things. You got language expression and you got language reception. Now, the comprehension part of it gives you an indicator that he, in fact, could be just slow in expressing himself verbally, could be a little bit slow with some kind of speech dysfunction here. I would say this, to ease your mind, you get a speech evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that. Perhaps if he may be able to do it through your local school, if they have a preschool program. You can say, look, we're concerned a little bit about what might be a delay in speaking, and we really don't know what that could reflect.
Yeah. He has kind of done that already, and this lady comes to the daycare and works with him, I think, just, you know, just seeing what he can do, and she says he's doing well. And then they had her do a couple of surveys. And I just listened recently to a discussion you had with the other young mom with a child in, you know, daycare or preschool. And, you know, and you said they cannot test for autism, you know.
No, I didn't say that. I said when you attempt to assess for ADHD, the younger the child, the more it gets complicated by development. That's what I said.
I thought there was.
Well, that's, Teresa, this is why I get in trouble. This is why people send me these emails and say, I can't believe I have an autistic child. I can't believe you said you couldn't test for autism. I didn't say that at all. So what I would say is this. You talk to that lady who's doing some one-on-one work with Jonathan and ask her, what do you think? Do you think at this point, given your experience with kids his age, is he within the normal range? Or if there is a delay, how much? Is his language comparable to a 1.5-year-old's? Is his language comparable to a 1-year-old's? Now you got to get some sense of that and see how much of this might be an overall cognitive delay, which doesn't mean... When we adopted our son, he was 3 years old when we adopted him, and he was so language delayed. I mean, this kid knew about 5 words. So right now, he's 29 years old, and he is working on a cruise ship, and he is making more money than his brothers and sisters who all have college degrees.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah,
you know, so.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah.
So
yeah.
So
and so she's actually taking all the right steps, and she
yeah,
knows it.
Yeah,
know,
she got to get him assessed.
You're doing everything you can do now. Just yeah. wait for them to come back and tell you what they think.
And the other thing is this, Teresa, you can't give him a pill to say, okay, we're gonna catch him up developmentally. We're gonna give him a pill. No, you work mm-hmm. with him one-on-one. You attempt to build the skills as you can. But mm-hmm. if for whatever the reason he is slow in picking up language, all right, mm-hmm. he's slow in picking up language. He's not going to be 10 years yeah. old and not going to be able to speak.
Yeah.
All righty. Okay. Thank you for the call, my dear. I appreciate it.
I'm trying to ease her mind. Don't, you know, you're doing all the right steps. Just
sure.
Don't
keep an
don't
eye
worry
on it.
About everything.
Yeah, keep an eye on it. Yeah. Recognize that he's still very little yet. All right. Thank you, Teresa. This is Dr. A.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
I'm continually amazed and humbled at the way God can work through me to help so many people. Although I have no idea what the caller's questions will be that day, I trust that the Holy Spirit can use my education and experience to guide, challenge, or comfort those who call.
Mast Appeal with Colleen Kelly Mast. Saturday morning, 9 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
The Encounter Conference, June 26th through the 28th at the New Glass City Center in Toledo, Ohio. 15 powerful speakers.
It is the encounter with the Holy Spirit that makes Jesus come alive and gives us the courage and the wisdom to go forth and to even risk our own lives.
Everyone pretty much says the miracles that Jesus did are real. The miracles that the early church did are real.
As often as the popes are talking about the new evangelization, they're also saying we need to pray for a new Pentecost. We need to return to the upper room. Encounter represents the church returning to the upper room. As we're coming boldly before God and asking Him to renew that Pentecostal fire for the strength, the gifts, and the wisdom to be able to preach Jesus to a lost and broken world so that we can become fully alive in Him so that the world may come to believe that Jesus is the one whom God sent.
Register today at EncounterConference.org. That's EncounterConference.org.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Do you have an insurance plan that pays for everything? Even things you don't believe in? There are options. You can join Solidarity HealthShare, a faith-based health-sharing community. Plus, Solidarity HealthShare can save you money with prices starting as low as $384 a month for families.
Call to see how much you can save. 844-398-9399. That's 844-398-9399.
Heard about the saints who could bilocate? Well, I'm one step below that. Do a bilocute. Talk to two different places at the same time. Actually, it might be omnilocute. Ubiquityocute. Talk to a lot of different places at the same time. Let's go to AJ from Omaha, Nebraska, who just doesn't understand with all these regulations who holds the regulators accountable. Hi, AJ.
Hi, Dr. A. Yeah, I generally agree with like the point you made, and but I was thinking about it, and I was like, you know, you run into this with a lot of different issues in regard to the state, like, you know, even when it came to like the coronavirus, and they put all these kids in masks, and I mean, some people brought up the transgender points and stuff like that, and we have seen that, you know, the negative effects that some of these things had on kids, putting them in remote learning and all this stuff, and how, you know, it just did not seem prudent, like balanced out wise, you know, what was the greater, you know, the greater issue. They harmed, you know, all these kids' mental health during doing these things. And then yet they go in and say, you know, we have to judge how, you know, whether or not a parent properly regulated their child in regard to mental health. And it's like, yeah, how do you trust a state to regulate when, you know, I don't, like, clearly the state needs to regulate certain things, but what's the answer, I guess, you know? Like,
the answer is you hope and pray for leaders who are rational, reasonable, morally guided, wise. When you have them driven by self-interest, you have them driven by emotional factors, you have them driven by the fact that I'm running way ahead. Like in COVID, they ran way ahead of what they really knew. You're right. There are all kinds of... You've heard of the law of unintended consequences? Have you ever heard that?
No.
It basically states the fact that when someone who is in a position of authority, or someone's, it's more likely someone's, okay, people who are in positions of authority make a ruling or make a particular societal narrative, they don't foresee much of the time the ugly byproducts of it. Mm-hmm. For example, in COVID, they did not foresee what that would do to kids' learning. They just thought all the kids would come running back, jump ahead within the year, and be right back on track. In some respects, when we shut down the churches, did we foresee that right now 17% of people who attended Catholic churches prior to COVID are no longer there? We foresee that? So you're right. There's a certain wisdom involved in making good decisions at a societal, cultural level. And the people who are in those positions of power, you hope that they have enough foresight to say, okay, if we do this. For example, what's happening with transgender. Now, there's a lot of byproducts coming out here. And many, many countries in Europe have essentially said no more trans surgery and no more hormonal replacement for juveniles. They've said it. Said flat out. Science doesn't support it. We don't have evidence that indicates these are safe. The U.S. not there yet. I suspect they will be at some point, but you're right. How do you hold the people in positions of power accountable? One thing we have, in many cases anyway, is votes. Problem with that is, of course, it's not so easy to know who you're voting for and what they actually believe. But I know you make great sense. I mean, a culture can be driven into the ground by its leaders. Look at Venezuela. Venezuela was one of the richest countries in South America. Now it's one of the poorest. Different leadership.
It seems like a lot of this comes down to, you know, basically needing to pray for our leaders, pray and vote and do what you can. But you bring up the point, like on a societal level, you know, we have people constantly, whenever this stuff comes up, like Uvalde, they just want to blame guns and they want to blame parents and they want to blame anything but the state of society. And it just seems like Society is in a real mental mess.
Yes, I'm afraid I agree with you. If you look at all the statistics, the families, absolutely, 50 years ago, these statistics on the family would have been unheard of, absolutely unheard of. But it shows you how fast immorality can take over, right? So good point there.
We need more people to start listening to Dr. Ray.
I want to tell you something, though. When I worked at the Mental Health Center in Lisbon, I was there for about 10, 12 years, we had this rule that when a kid came in, a parent brought a kid in, if he had initials, it was more likely to be trouble. PJ, JJ, AJ, CJ. We thought, uh-oh, that indicates could have some trouble there. I'm teasing you.
But my parents can probably attest to that.
JJ, thanks for the call, man. I'll talk to you. All right, no time for... Well, was it the Guess Who? No time left for you. That sounds kind of cold, but no time left for any more calls. I appreciate the company. And as I said, the good Lord permitting, next week I'm heading to St. Louis. Going to be there for 3 days. The Covenant Network people run a wonderful network, a big one too. I think Adam, if you're listening, at 40-some states stations you guys got, that's impressive. I think that may be why you got such big crowds in the audience for the TV show. But that I'm looking forward to that very, very much, and we'll see if we can come up with some exciting audience bits. I want to thank Andrew Krucek, my producer man over there in Ann Arbor. I want to thank EWTN. Been associated with them now for some 20 years, and it's been nothing but a wonderful ride. So I want to thank all the dear folks at EWTN, my bosses. I got all kinds of bosses over there. I do, you know. But the thing is, I'm so old, it doesn't really matter. I got a boss, and okay, I'm old. So what are you going to do? So they're younger than I am, getting bossed around by these kids. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor's Inn. Good Lord permitting, I'll see you tomorrow. Walk with God. You know, there's no unintended consequences of walking with God.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.